and a winning smile. She remembered how that smile had hit her when they'd first met, on the shoulder of the 405 freeway. Now, as she took in his familiar features, she braced herself for the onslaught of emotions sure to follow. There was surprise, which was to be expected. A vague sense of why now, followed by nothing. She inhaled and checked again. There was nothing. Chad, she leaned against the door. Why are you here? He wore a white t-shirt and jeans, clothes he would change out of at work where he wore a uniform. She had always loved him in jeans and a t-shirt. They were sexy, and so every man. Today she would admit he looked good, but her heart wasn't racing, and she didn't feel those low-in-the-belly tingles anymore. How unexpected. It seemed she might actually be over him.
I want to talk, he said. Zoe, aren't you going to let me in?
Making him stand outside made more of a statement than she wanted, so she moved aside. Mason raised his head, stared at Chad for a second, then relaxed and closed his eyes, as if dismissing the man. Mason had always been an excellent judge of character. Zoe deliberately sat in one of the living room chairs instead of the sofa. She didn't want Chad too close. How can I help you? She asked.
He frowned. That's kind of cold. Are you punishing me?
I'm working. You dropped by unexpectedly. We're not involved anymore, and I don't know why you're here, so I'm asking what's going on.
You're still angry.
I'm not. Far from it. She was kind of happy about her lack of reaction. He sat with his elbows resting on his thighs, his hands hanging loose.
I miss you. I miss us. I want us to get back together. Just tell me what that will take, and I'll do it.
She crossed her legs. She hadn't seen this coming, and didn't know what to do with the information. She wasn't happy to hear any of it. There was no sense of relief or excitement, yet more proof that she'd moved on. Time really did heal. Or maybe it was more than that. Maybe there hadn't been that much to get over. Because looking back, she could see that she and Chad hadn't had much of a relationship.
Are you going to say something? He asked impatiently. You've left me hanging here.
What does get back together mean? She asked, curious as to what he was offering. You'd come over a few nights a week. We'd hang out, have sex, then you'd go back to your place.
What's wrong with that?
His voice was cautious, as if he sensed a trap but couldn't quite see it. Nothing. It's what we always did. She turned the information over in her head. That's all we did. We rarely went to the movies or even out to eat. We never traveled together.
It's hard for me to get away. I have work and the kids.
Right, and they take all your vacation days. And it's not as if I could have gone along. I mean, they barely knew me. He scowled.
Are you going to keep bringing that up? You've met them. Why isn't that enough? They have to deal with the divorce. They're still adjusting.
She didn't point out it had been almost 2 years, that whatever was happening between their parents, they were used to it now. Because this wasn't about the kids. It never had been. We never had a relationship, Chad. That's my fault as much as yours. We didn't do anything together. We didn't have couple friends. Our relationship was dinner and sex and very little else. I have no idea why I never saw that before.
Is this about getting married? He asked, then shook his head. You're obsessed with getting married.
I'm not. It was never about the ring, Chad. It was about commitment. It was about being a part of each other's lives. The argument was so familiar. Whenever she tried to take things to the next level, he always deflected her in one way or another. And here you are, doing it again. Oh, my God, you've been doing it for years. She was talking out loud, but more to herself than him. I would push for something, and you would distract me with a different argument, usually about how I was obsessed with getting married. I'd got embarrassed and immediately pulled back. The argument ended, and life went on. She couldn't believe she hadn't seen that before. You don't want a relationship. You want a Zoe compartment in your life, an easy booty call with a bonus dinner. Worse, I allowed you to have that. I didn't demand more. Because here's the thing. I'm not wrong to want someone who actually wants to be involved with my life. Maybe it's not what you want, and that's fine, but you don't get to make me feel bad about what's important to me.
She stood. A sense of empowerment left her almost lightheaded. Chad grimaced. You're not making any sense.
She looked at him. 6 months ago, she would have sworn she loved this man. But the truth was he'd allowed her to be lazy. For too long, she'd let him be enough. Well, not anymore. I don't want to see you again, Chad. We don't want the same things. I wish you every happiness, but it won't be with me.
He stood. You're going to regret this, he told her. I was good to you.
She walked to the door and held it open. Goodbye, Chad. He looked like he was going to say something else, then shook his head and walked out. She closed the door behind him and glanced at Mason. I think that was impressive, don't you? She got a tail flick in response. I'm going to take that as a yes. Chapter 9 Jen pulled into the parking lot of the Learning and Growing Daycare Center on Manus Avenue. The building was large and painted in bright primary colors. There were trees and lawn and the sound of shrieking children in a big playground off to the side. According to her research, the daycare center had gotten high marks from several parents. It was accredited, and none of the employees had criminal records. While that wasn't as much information as she would like, she figured she had to start somewhere. It was 3 minutes before 10. She and Jack had a 10 o'clock appointment with the director. Even though every bone in her body told her to keep Jack safe at home, a very small part of her brain whispered that it was possible that her son might enjoy hanging out with kids his age. Socialization was an important part of his development, and at the end of the day, it was all about Jack. She opened the back door of her SUV. Jack smiled and clapped his hands as she unfastened him, then lifted him out. He was a happy, wiggling bundle. She set him on the ground, then took his hand and locked her car. This is going to be great, she told him, hoping she wasn't lying. You'll see. There will be lots of kids and enrichment, and you're going to love it. They walked to the main doors and went inside. There was a small reception area with an unmanned desk to the left and a hallway leading to several large rooms. As she watched, a boy about 4 wandered down the hall, and no one seemed to notice. Jack started after him. Jen picked him up. We are going to wait here for our appointment with Angela, she said cheerfully. 2 minutes later, she still hadn't seen an adult, so she started going from room to room. The first 2 were empty. The 3rd had about 15 toddlers with only 2 adults. The noise level was astonishing, and chaos reigned. Hello, she called. I'm looking for Angela. One of the women glanced up. Her office is at the end of the hall. Aaron, no, don't throw the truck. Thanks. Jen glanced over her shoulder. There's a little boy wandering around out here by himself. The 2 women exchanged a look. One rolled her eyes and started out of the room. Just then one of the little boys hit another with a decent-sized toy truck. The blow landed squarely across the bridge of the nose and blood erupted, along with shrieks of pain. Aaron, what did you do? I've told you and told you. Jen backed out of the room as the other children joined in the crying. Jack clung to her, looking worried. No way, she thought grimly. This wasn't daycare. This was a badly run institution. They returned to their SUV. Jen called Angela and got put directly to her voicemail. She left a message, canceling her appointment, then looked at the address of the 2nd place she wanted to visit. The Learning Academy of Mischief Bay was also accredited and had plenty of parent recommendations, but it was smaller. Jen had been worried there wouldn't be sufficient staff, but it wasn't like the bigger place had enough people around. What she wanted to do was drive straight home, to the safety of Jack's ordinary world. But Kirk's words still burned, so she told herself she would give the 2nd place 5 minutes, and then she could be done. The drive from one daycare center to the other took less than 10 minutes. This time she found herself in a quiet, residential part of town. The house with the sign in front was across from the playground at Founders Park. There were plenty of trees and nice lawns. The homes were older, but well-kept. Once again, she collected Jack and walked to the front door. She rang the bell and was stunned when she heard a dog bark. Who on earth allowed a dog in a daycare center? What if the kids were allergic? What if the dog bit someone? She nearly turned back to her car, but before she could bolt, the door opened and a middle-aged woman smiled at her. Can I help you? I'm Jen Belden, and this is my son, Jack. Our appointment is at 11, so we're a little early. Like 45 minutes early. But Jen wasn't going to admit that out loud. Of course. I'm Rose. Come on in. Jen carried Jack inside. What had been the living room had been turned into a play area. The big open space had large windows and a thick mat on the floor. There were shelves filled with toys, a large television against one wall, and lots of seating. Small chairs and low sofas, beanbag chairs, and a few kid-sized rocking chairs. This is one of our play areas, Rose explained. We have movie afternoons on Monday and Thursday. Otherwise, there's no TV allowed. Our philosophy is that of gentle scheduling. She laughed. Our goal is to stick to a schedule, but we're dealing with children under the age of 5, so we have to be flexible. Just then, a mid-sized blue heeler trotted into the room. He had an expressive face with two brown eyebrows and a happy doggy grin. Despite his wagging tail, Jen instinctively took a step back. Rose motioned for the dog to move closer to her. This is Buddy. Rose turned to the dog. Buddy, can you say hello? Buddy raised a paw and gave a low woof. Jen held on to Jack. Is it safe having a dog in the house with so many children? What if he bites someone? I certainly understand your concern, said Rose, laying a protective hand on Buddy's head. He was a service dog for 3 years. The little girl he was helping passed away, and he was devastated. The family and I are friends, so I offered to take Buddy. He's great with the kids here. Which all sounded fine and well, Jen thought suspiciously, but didn't answer her question. Rose showed her the dining room that had been converted into a lunch area for the children with smaller-scale tables and chairs. The kitchen looked clean enough. What would have been the family room was also a play area. Jen saw about 6 toddlers with 2 caregivers. There were several puzzles on the floor. Outside was a big backyard with plenty of play equipment, large trees, grass, and a shady area. Another 5 or 6 children played outside, and there were 2 more caregivers with them. You're using a lot of your house for daycare, she murmured, putting Jack down so he could join the puzzle group. My own children are long grown, and my husband passed away, Rose told her. I built an apartment upstairs. I live there, and the downstairs is for my business. Jack walked over and sat down. He reached for a puzzle piece. One of the helpers, a woman in her early 20s, Jen would guess, smiled at him. Hi, I'm Holly. Who are you? He doesn't talk, Jen said quickly. Not yet. Holly nodded. That's okay. You'll talk when you're ready. Do you like puzzles? I do. This piece is red. Everyone who works for me has a background in either education or early childhood development. Rose pointed to an older woman outside with the other kids. Mary's been with me nearly 10 years. She raised 8 children herself, then worked a couple of other places before coming here. Holly is getting her master's in early childhood development. She works here part-time. Rose talked about how their days were structured and the various programs they offered. A lady came in 3 mornings a week and taught Mandarin. An older gentleman came and played various musical instruments every Monday and Thursday. But Jen wasn't really listening. Instead, she saw that the walls were scuffed and the windows could use a good washing. She wanted to head back to the kitchen and look at the counters. Were they really clean? Had she seen a jar of peanut butter? Because everyone knew that young children should avoid peanuts. And that dog. She didn't care what Buddy had done before. He was an animal. If a child pulled his tail, he would react. The little boy next to Jack sneezed. Jen moved toward her son and scooped him up. She was sure there were sensible questions she was supposed to be asking. On the surface, the place was great, if she ignored the dog, the peeling paint, and the sick kid. She felt the familiar tightness in her chest, the one that made it hard to breathe. Not here, she told herself. She couldn't have a panic attack. Not right now. Later, when she was home. Later, when she was safe. She couldn't do this, she thought desperately. She couldn't leave her child alone in a place like this. I have to go, she said, fighting to keep her breath as her chest got tighter and tighter. Rose looked confused. Don't you want to fill out an application? She asked. I'm going to have an opening in a few weeks. Usually I have a waiting list, but right now I don't. Jen clutched Jack to her chest. I need to talk to my husband and think about it. I'm just not sure. She bolted for the door. Rose followed. Are you all right? The other woman asked with concern. Jen nodded and ran to her car. She got Jack into his car seat, then started the engine. She punched the buttons on the radio until she found the happy children's music Jack liked and turned up the volume. Only then did she start gasping for air. Her throat was so tight, her whole body hurt. Tears burned her eyes as she sucked in air. She told herself she was fine, that she could breathe, that nothing was wrong. Only she knew she was lying. Everything was wrong, and no one would believe her.
What are you doing?
Pam stared at her phone. There was nothing untoward about the message, yet she still felt a strange combination of guilty and naughty as she answered. Reading?
Would you like some company?
She dropped the phone on the sofa, picked it up again, put it back down, then pressed a pillow against her face and screamed into the soft fabric. Lulu jumped to her feet and stared at her. I'm fine, she assured her dog. It's just... never mind. Still looking wary, Lulu curled back up on the sofa. Pam and Miguel had been texting every day or so since their dinner together. She refused to call it by the other D word, despite what Shannon had said. It had been dinner and talking with, the father of a friend. Nothing more. Even so, her fingers trembled as she typed, Sure.
I'll be there in 15 minutes. I'll bring the limes.
Limes? What did that mean? Was it code for... She groaned. It wasn't code for anything. The man's family made tequila. He probably always had limes on him. She stood and stared at Lulu. We're going to have company. The little dog scrambled to her feet as if she understood the urgency of the situation, if not the particulars. Pam scanned her living room. The condo wasn't large, just 2 bedrooms, a living room, and kitchen dining area. She'd been used to taking care of a much larger place and had no trouble keeping up with the cleaning. She'd dusted and vacuumed just the day before. The guest bath was tidy, the kitchen picked up. There was really nothing for her to do. She glanced at Lulu. The Chinese crested had on a simple silver T-shirt with the word Princess on the back, in shiny letters. Perhaps not Miguel's style, but then she wasn't asking him to wear it. As for herself, she glanced down, then shrieked again and bolted for her bedroom. She was in a ratty old T-shirt and shorts. While her legs were toned, they were pale, and there were a few veins. In her regular life, this didn't bother her, but for some reason, she was suddenly determined to cover up. She quickly changed into ankle-length pants and a fitted tank top, then threw on a matching, lightweight, tailored short-sleeved shirt. She left her feet bare but touched up her makeup, then went into the kitchen and wondered if she should put out some kind of snack. She tried to figure out how much time had passed. No way she could throw some snacky thing together. Besides, it wasn't as if this was a planned meeting. She couldn't be responsible for providing food with no warning. She'd just about talked herself out of panic when she heard a knock on the door. Lulu gave a little announcement bark, then trotted to the front door, her tail wagging. Pam sucked in a breath, told herself everything was fine, then opened the door.
Pamela.
The obvious delight in Miguel's voice, the sight of him in worn jeans and a relatively subdued Hawaiian shirt, while looking all manly and handsome, did a number on her breathing. Or maybe she was having a hot flash. She wasn't sure. She had to clear her throat before she could speak. Miguel, come in. He smiled at her, then crouched down, offering his fingers to Lulu.
Not until you introduce me to this beautiful girl.
This is Lulu. Miguel stroked the side of her face. The Chinese crested let her eyes sink closed for a second before offering a kiss. Pam was almost jealous. The man did have a way with women, she thought. Not that she was interested in that sort of thing. It was simply... All right, fine. She had no idea what it was, so she would ignore it. Miguel stepped into her condo and crossed to the large French doors. Beyond the balcony was the boardwalk, then sand, then ocean for as far as the eye could see.
Beautiful, he said. You must enjoy watching the ocean and her many moods.
I do. I lived in a house for years, so I wasn't sure how I would adjust to condo living. Sometimes I feel like my place is a little small, but this makes it all worthwhile. He turned and she saw yet a leather backpack hanging from one shoulder. He took it off and smiled.
I come prepared.
He pointed to the kitchen.
May I?
She nodded, not sure what he was going to do. Once in her kitchen, he set the backpack on the island counter, then opened it. Inside was a bottle of his family's tequila, several limes, Cointreau, and a martini shaker. She started to laugh. Seriously? You take that with you everywhere you go?
Not everywhere, but many places. Now I need a cutting board and some ice. It's nearly 5 o'clock.
She got him what he requested. As she filled her small ice bucket, she found a box of frozen mini quiches and pulled them out. If they were going to be drinking tequila, she was going to need food. While the oven preheated, Miguel crossed to Lulu and lifted her into his arms. He held her easily, not a surprise. He had a small dog himself and would be used to the delicate bones. He cradled her, supporting her and patting her at the same time. Lulu relaxed into the attention. He took up more space than Pam was used to, except for her sons. She'd never had a man over to her place, and she wasn't sure what to do with herself. Part of her wanted to keep her distance, while the rest of her wanted to move closer. Of course, the thought of being too close made her uncomfortable, so she was well and truly confused.
"Have you thought about our dinner?"
he asked. "Some." He raised his eyebrows, as if questioning her honesty. She sighed. "All right, yes, I have."
"Good. I have as well. You are a beautiful and interesting woman, Pamela."
She laughed. "Oh, please. There's no need to turn on the charm like that."
"You think I'm not telling the truth? How do you see yourself?"
A question that had her totally stumped. How did she see herself? She was a mother, a friend, a wife, although that last role was different now. As for how Miguel had described her, she honestly didn't know what to make of that. "I don't know how to do this," she admitted, "and I'm not sure I want to. You're very charming, and while that's fun, I don't know what you want or expect from me." She thought that even if they were dating, which they weren't, it was way too soon to be having this conversation. Still, she couldn't seem to stop herself. "I was married over 30 years. Being with John is all I know. I'm his wife, and that is never going to change." Miguel continued to hold Lulu.
"I don't want you to be other than you already are. The person you are today is the woman I find so intriguing. What are you afraid of? Losing your past? You can't. John is with you always. He's a part of you."
Not anything she expected. "If you get that, then why are you here?"
"Because you still have a future, Pamela, many years ahead of you. I'd like to get to know you better, see where this leads. Now that I understand you haven't felt ready to date, I'll go more slowly."
He flashed her a smile.
"I'm old enough to appreciate the power of anticipation."
"But I'm not interested in you in that way." That was what she meant to say, what she should say, because she wasn't. Other men weren't on her radar. She wasn't looking for anything other than what she had. Only she couldn't seem to speak the words. She was confused and sad, but also fighting a very real flicker of, if not hope, then maybe expectation. Miguel reminded her of the best part of her marriage, the connection, being a part of something, knowing someone. She hadn't thought she would ever go there again, and maybe she still wouldn't. But refusing to consider the possibility no longer seemed so important. The oven dinged. She slid in the tray of mini quiches. Miguel set Lulu down and walked to the sink. After washing his hands, he turned to her.
I'm going to teach you how to make a margarita.
I know how.
The smile returned. You only think you do. Believe me, I'm a professional. There are secrets that will leave you amazed.
Highly unlikely, but sure, you can try.
He laughed. You're not easy, are you?
No. I'm also confused and wary, just so you know.
His humor faded. He moved close and stared into her eyes. Be comfortable saying no, Pamela. At the same time, be comfortable saying yes. Every now and then life gives us an unexpected opportunity. How sad to walk away without sampling what is offered.
Before she could respond, he leaned over and kissed her. Just once, and oh so lightly. He straightened and walked to the island.
The perfect margarita begins with great tequila. I brought you the best.
You might be a little prejudiced about that.
I'm not. I've tried all the others, and this is by far the most superior tequila ever made. Now, the secret to the perfect margarita is proportion and very sweet limes. Do you know how to tell if a lime is sweet?
She leaned against the counter and smiled. No, but I have a feeling you're going to tell me.
He winked. I'm going to show you, Pamela, which is much, much more interesting.
Jen's ongoing research about Jack had finally led her to someone she hoped could help. So Thursday morning she left Jack with her mother and an hour later had parked outside a 3-story medical building in Orange County. The outside was a little shabby, but Jen was more concerned about the woman she was meeting inside. She went up to the 3rd floor and found the office. Deirdre McCallan was an herbalist and nurse practitioner who had rave reviews on several parenting sites. Deirdre specialized in treating autistic children with herbal remedies and other alternative therapies. Jen had come prepared. She had copies of Jack's medical records, including his most recent blood work and the results of several evaluations. She'd also recorded a few home sessions so Deirdre could see how he interacted. The reception area was small, with a worn love seat and a single wooden chair. The air smelled of incense and sandalwood. Primitive art decorated the walls. Jen perched on the edge of the wooden chair and told herself everything would be fine. If not this woman, then she would find someone else. She wasn't giving up on her son. Right at 11, the inner door opened and a tall, thin woman, about 40 or so, came out. You must be Jennifer, she said, holding out her hand. I'm Deirdre. So nice to meet you. Please come back and let's talk. The private office was about 3 times the size of the waiting area. There were bookshelves lining 2 walls and fabric hangings on the others. A large window opened onto the parking lot and the freeway beyond. The furniture was overstuffed with an Asian influence. There were several carved wood tables and a few low stools along with 2 sofas. The incense smell was stronger here. A refrigerator hummed in the corner. Next to that was a cabinet with a large lock by the handle. Deirdre motioned to one of the sofas. Please, make yourself comfortable. When they were seated, Deirdre leaned forward. Tell me what brings you here today. It's about my son, Jack. He's 19 months old. Jen explained how he'd been growing just fine, doing everything he was supposed to do on time. Until recently. She handed over the records, talked about the tests, and finished with, I know there's something wrong. I'm with him every day and I feel it in my gut. But no one will listen. No one believes me. Deirdre sighed. I feel your frustration. Western medicine is excellent when it comes to mechanics. You can't meditate away a broken bone. But with the more subtle issues, especially those involving the brain, it is still in the dark ages. If it isn't detailed in a textbook, it doesn't exist. She offered a sympathetic smile. You're his mother. Of course you would sense what was right and what was wrong about your own child. She held out her hand, and Jen passed over the files. The human body is a complex organism, she continued. So many systems interact in unique and unexpected ways. The immune system alone baffles us. What causes cancer, MS, dementia? We're barely scratching the surface. Jen listened politely, but honestly had no idea what the other woman was going on about. I just want Jack to talk. Of course you do. To talk and be like other children. It's what all parents want.
Can you help me?
Deirdre continued to smile. I'm going to do my best. She rested her hands on the files but didn't open them. Let me tell you how my process works. I'll review his tests, then arrange for a few of my own. I'll want to have his hair analyzed for toxins. We'll need to do a saliva test, which will be challenging as he's so young, but it's not impossible.
That's a cheek swab?
Deirdre shook her head. He will spit saliva into test tubes at different times during the day.
There was a yucky visual, Jen thought as her stomach lurched.
Okay, she said slowly. Deirdre set Jack's file on the table, then went to her desk. There she picked up a slim folder and handed it to Jen. This will explain the basic toddler package. I suggest we start there. I'll want to start him on supplements right away.
Jen stiffened. The folder slipped from her fingers and fell to the floor.
Supplements? What do you mean? He's low on essential elements.
You haven't even met him. How can you know that?
Deirdre's smile was knowing. Because of where he lives and what he eats. Our food has been robbed of all its nutrients. Your son is in a state of amino acid starvation. Everyone is. With Jack, it's manifesting in his inability to talk.
Supplements?
What's in them? My proprietary blend. I'm afraid I can't tell you what that is. I hope you'll understand.
Jen felt the last bubble of hope pop. She didn't let her son watch TV or eat sugar. There was no way she was going to give him a bunch of mystery supplements.
Deirdre's kind expression never changed. I know this is difficult. You're confused and afraid. What I'm offering isn't traditional medicine, and what we aren't used to can be frightening to us. Take the material and read it. When you're ready, bring Jack to meet me and we'll get started. In the meantime, I would love to check your hormone level. I'm sure they're still out of balance from your pregnancy.
I just want my son to talk, she repeated. There had to be an answer somewhere. But not here, she thought as she rose. She grabbed Jack's file from the coffee table.
How much do I owe you for the consultation?
The first visit is always complimentary.
Deirdre rose.
I feel your pain, Jennifer. I can help. When you're ready, I'll be here.
If only that information was helpful, Jen thought as she left and made her way back to her car. Once she was behind the wheel, she leaned back and closed her eyes. Hair analysis and saliva tests? Jack wasn't even 2. She couldn't do that to him or herself. Whatever the answer was, it wasn't here, which meant she had to keep looking. She didn't care how long it took or if no one else thought there was a problem. She wasn't giving up on her son. She just wished she wasn't so very alone in her struggle.
Chapter 10 Zoe pulled into Stephen's driveway. His house was slightly larger than hers and a little older. She could see the roof was new and the yard had been spruced up. Given his background in construction, he was likely to be handy with the remodeling, she thought, as she walked around to the passenger side and opened the door. Stephen stepped out onto his front porch, then came down to help. She allowed herself a second to admire him in jeans and an open shirt over a green T-shirt before motioning to the car.
Don't be frightened, she said with a laugh. I'm not moving in. I just got a little carried away.
He studied the small crock pot and the 2 grocery bags. I think I can handle this much baggage. I'm a tough guy.
With that, he put his arm around her waist and pulled her close. She went easily into his embrace. His kiss was sure and delicious. There was no sense of being rushed, of this being a pit stop on the journey to something better. When he released her, she found herself wanting to keep on kissing him. Her nerves were humming. Her girl parts, happy. This was nice, she told herself, being with him, getting to know him. So far, there weren't any complications or games, no secrets. She appreciated that.
So, what did you bring me? He asked,
as he picked up the crockpot in one hand and the bags with the other. She collected her handbag and followed him into the house. An Asiago cheese dip, she said. Spicy, but one of my favorites.
I have crackers, a tortellini salad, cut-up raw veggies, and cookies.
Stephen pushed open his front door. I said I was going to make you dinner.
You are. These are just extras.
The mid-century house had a large living room with a stone fireplace that reached to the ceiling. Big windows opened onto the front yard. She could see the dining room beyond.
It's a girl thing, she told him, as they walked down the short hallway to the kitchen. We have to bring food.
I'm not complaining.
He set everything on the counter.
All I have is steaks, green salad, and some red wine.
So it all works out.
It does.
He put his hand on her waist and drew her to him. She went willingly and leaned up against him. Despite their difference in heights, they fit together nicely. He was lean yet muscled, and he smelled good. But instead of kissing her, he stared into her eyes.
You're so beautiful.
She flushed. She'd taken extra time deciding on what to wear. She'd settled on a casual dress and flats. Her hair was loose with a slight curl, and she was wearing just enough makeup to feel pretty, but not so much that she looked like she was trying hard. Nice that he noticed. He touched her cheek with his fingers, then lightly kissed her lips before stepping back.
What has to go in the refrigerator?
The salad. The dip should be plugged in. They took care of that. Then he poured them each a glass of wine. He gave her a quick tour of the house. The hall bath was torn down to the studs. There was a sketch on the bathroom wall showing what it would look like when it was finished. Do you do all the work yourself?
I could, but I don't have time. To be honest, while I know how to do tile work, I'm not an expert, so I trade for it. I have buddies who come in and help. In return, I show up at their place. It works.
He put his arm around her and led her back down the hall. She saw the guest bedroom had tools stacked in a corner and a pair of sinks by the window.
I'm going to wait to paint all the bedrooms at once.
He gestured behind them.
The master is that way, he said. Best not to go in there.
Too messy?
Too tempting.
Her stomach clenched. She liked that he was being a gentleman, but not too much of one. On the other side of the house were two more guest rooms that were untouched and a big bathroom that had already been updated. The quartz countertops gleamed. There was a big walk-in shower and a tub, along with a linen closet. He'd chosen cool colors, white and various shades of gray, but they worked well together.
Nice, she said. Did you pick all this out yourself?
I wish. My mom helped. She's good with that kind of stuff. I wanted neutral tones. At some point, I'm going to settle down. I'm guessing at that time, the lady in question and I will want to get a house together so we can make it our own. This would become a rental property.
He showed her the remodeled family room. A big screen TV stood at one end, with comfortable, oversized leather chairs forming a seating area.
The surround sound is built in, he told her.
She laughed. Of course it is. There was a wide sliding door that led to a big backyard. There was a big grassy area, a few scraggly-looking plants, and a covered patio with a large barbecue.
I haven't done much out here, he said. I landscaped the front last fall and then got busy with the inside of the house. I'll tackle this part in the spring.
I've always wanted raised planting beds. I want to do some at my house. I'm just not sure how.
I can help. They're easy.
That would be nice. Thank you. They went back in through the kitchen, then around the corner.
Tell me what you think, he said,
stepping back so she could walk into the small half-bath. It was like stepping back in time. The floor and counter were done in 1950s light and dark blue tiles. The ones on the counter were square, but the ones on the floor were six-sided, with the darker tiles on the inside and the lighter tiles as a border. The walls were an even lighter blue. The mirror was round, and the toilet was medium blue. Zoe started to laugh.
Is that good laughter or bad? Stephen asked.
I love it.
Yeah? I'll admit my first thought was to tear out everything and start over. But the longer I live with it, the more it grows on me.
If we were talking about the kitchen or the master bath, I'd tell you to remodel. But this is just a half bath. Why not keep it? It goes with the air of the house, and it's actually really appealing. They went back to the kitchen. Zoe set out the appetizers. She spooned the hot dip into a bowl, and they took everything into the living room. Rather than sit on the sofa, they sat on the floor at the coffee table. Soft jazz played from hidden speakers. You have a nice setup, she told him. Is this your first house?
It is.
You did well.
He grinned. For a man. Admit it. That's what you were thinking.
Maybe. Of course, you have an unfair advantage. You've been in the construction business for a while. You've been exposed to different styles of architecture.
I still think beige is a perfectly good color.
She laughed. Okay, that is very much a guy thing. But you don't think it's the only color?
That's true.
She looked around. You don't have Lulu. I know your mom's out of town.
Lulu is a special girl, but I don't think I'm ready to take her on just yet. She's with my mom's friend, Shannon.
Afraid you'd have to walk her? Stephen considered the question.
I'm fairly comfortable in my masculinity, but I have to admit, Lulu might be a little too over the top for me.
Maybe if she was wearing something in camouflage. He grinned.
I think the bigger problem is her wearing anything. She is a dog.
Not in her heart.
Mason would never wear clothes, he said.
Mason's a cat. It's different. I think Lulu looks adorable.
Then if I have to babysit her, you can walk her.
In a heartbeat.
So, what's new in the world of work? He asked. Any exciting manuals to translate?
She wrinkled her nose. No, which is why I've been thinking a lot about doing something else. I'm still at the I'm not sure what stage.
Any ideas? Still thinking about going into teaching?
A question I've been asking myself. I'm thinking about it. Substitute teaching would give me a way to test the waters again, without making a big commitment.
What age range?
I've been checking out the requirements, and I'm pretty sure I can handle them all. My degree is in English, so at the high school level I couldn't sub for any of the sciences or PE. But most of the other classes are fine.
He winked. You'd be that hot new teacher all the guys are after.
She held up both hands. Thanks, but I doubt that. I'll be the new awkward teacher who doesn't know what she's doing. She spooned some dip onto a cracker. Your mom has talked to me about her volunteer work. That sounds interesting, but I don't really have business experience. Still, I'm going to explore some volunteer opportunities. I'm also thinking about grad school. I'm going to talk to a counselor at Cal State Dominguez Hills. The college was close and had an excellent graduate program.
That's where I went, Stephen told her. It's a commuter school, but I had a good time.
I've heard about your wild days. A different girl every night. Any fond memories?
Plenty of memories and no reason to go back. That part of my life is over. I'm ready for the next phase.
Which sounded nice, Zoe thought, then reminded herself not to read too much into his words. They were only talking, not making a lifelong commitment. Still, it was nice to hear a man speak about the future at all. Chad never did. There were no specifics with him, no promises, no hopes. At the time, she'd been so sure she loved him. With hindsight, she saw theirs had been a relationship of convenience, nothing more.
What are you thinking about? Stephen asked.
She searched frantically for some other topic, but her mind was blank, and she was forced to admit, my ex. Stephen picked up a slice of red pepper.
In a good way or a bad way?
I was just wondering why I stayed with him for so long.
Didn't you say you lost your mom a while back?
Yes. One shoulder rose and lowered.
That's part of it. Even if you knew he wasn't right for you, how could you make any decision about your love life while you were dealing with the loss of your mother? He'd been a part of your life for a long time.
He paused.
I know what I went through when I lost my dad. Everything changed. It was as if I couldn't trust anything to stay the same. Life seemed fragile. You had to be dealing with something like that. If Chad was the least bit supportive, you would have clung to him. Don't beat yourself up.
The combination of support and insight surprised her. Even though he'd been through the loss of a parent about the same time, his compassion was unexpected. Or maybe that was more Chad leftovers. Thank you, she said. You're right. What's that quote? When I knew better, I did better? He nodded.
Now you're doing better.
She looked at him. I am. I would say I'm doing much better. He flashed her a smile.
I have no idea if you're talking about me, but I'm going to assume you are. It makes me feel good.
I am. You're quite the find.
I'm not all that.
He was, but she had a feeling he already knew, so why keep stating the obvious?
He surprised her by moving closer and touching her cheek.
"Besides, if anyone is the lucky one in this relationship," he murmured, "it's me."
He pressed his mouth to hers. She leaned into the kiss and enjoyed the feel of his lips against hers. His arms came around her. She wrapped hers around his neck. They were sitting at awkward angles, with their legs crossed and knees bumping. When he shifted, she relaxed against him and let him lower her to the carpeted floor. He bent over her and kissed her again. She parted her lips and he brushed his tongue against hers. Heat spiraled out from her belly, warming every part of her. She put her hands on his back and felt the strength of him. Everything about being with Stephen felt right, she thought, her mind fogging over. He was kind and nice and funny and successful. There was no horrible baggage from his past. If he had any deep, dark secrets, Jen would have told her. He was a good guy, and he made her tingle in all the right places. Where was the bad? They continued to kiss. Stephen shifted so he was lying next to her on the carpet. One hand rested on her midsection, but he didn't move it higher or lower. Because he was a really good guy, she thought, even as she found herself thinking a little bad boy wouldn't be so terrible. He raised his head and looked at her. His eyes were bright with passion, his gaze intense.
"I see this going two ways," he said quietly. "We can get going on dinner, or we can move this somewhere more comfortable. It's your call. Either way, I'm spending time with you, and to me, that's a win."
Because he wouldn't push. While she was sure he was perfectly capable of seducing the hell out of her, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't cajole or tease or push. He would want her to walk into his bedroom because that was what she wanted, too, not because it made him happy. She knew the sensible decision would be to get up and start dinner. That waiting to take things to the next level meant not getting distracted by passion. After all, they'd only been seeing each other a few weeks. She sat up and drew in a breath. "Dinner," she said, immediately regretting the single word. He scrambled to his feet before holding out his hand to help her up.
"How do you like your steak? I'm good up to medium. If you want it well done, you might have to scrape off some burned edges."
Just like that, she thought as she stood. No sulking, no pushing, no making her feel bad. Where was the guilt, the wine? "Medium rare works for me," he grinned.
"That's my best steak."
He started picking up their appetizers. She put her hand on his arm and stopped him. "Stephen, wait." He looked at her expectantly. She took his hand in hers. "About the room that was too tempting? I'd like to see it." She waited two whole heartbeats as her words sank in. His expression didn't change.
"You sure?"
She smiled. "Very." He kissed her once, then took her hand and led her down the hall. Saturday night, Pam sat with her friends on the hotel patio. The weather in Phoenix wasn't that much different than the weather in Mischief Bay, but Pam appreciated the opportunity to get away for a couple of days. Not that her life was so taxing, she thought, as she sipped her cocktail. It was more that she liked hanging out with her friends and appreciated the opportunity to step back from her life and get some perspective. They'd started the day with a 3-mile hike, followed by a late breakfast. After spending the afternoon shopping, they'd returned to the hotel for drinks and dinner. So far, no one had suggested they leave their spot on the bar's patio for the restaurant.
"Pam, we've talked about everyone but you," Eugenia said in her Texas drawl. "What's happening on your coast?"
Pam started to say the usual, only to realize that in the past few weeks, things had gotten a little more complicated.
"Jen is still upset about Jack. A friend of hers and I staged an intervention, and that didn't go well. She didn't speak to me for nearly 2 weeks. That only changed last Thursday because she needed someone to stay with Jack while she went to a doctor's appointment."
Pam thought about the clipped phone call she'd had with her daughter, followed by their brief exchange when Jen had dropped off Jack.
"I don't know what to do about her," she admitted. "I spent 3 hours with that boy and he's fine. I swear he'll talk when he's ready."
She paused.
"But what if I'm wrong and Jen is right?" "Then you'll deal with it,"
Olympia, a petite redhead in her late 50s, said firmly. "You've raised 3 children.
You have experience. There's something about this new generation of mothers. They think they're the first ones to ever raise a child.
Laura, a tall, full-figured woman, groaned. Don't get me started. My daughters are sticklers for organic. They actually go through my cupboards as if expecting to find a box of cookies labeled poisonous for children, but oh so delicious.
She shook her head. I'm not an idiot. I know what I'm doing.
But do they think that? Of course not.
Jen needs to get out more, Olympia said. She's not back to work yet, is she?
No, Pam thought about their conversation. She said she checked out daycare places but didn't find one she liked.
Is it possible for one to exist that she would like? Eugenia asked.
I don't mean that to sound mean, but isn't this the same woman who insisted every item of bedding be natural cotton without dyes?
Pam winced as she recalled Jen's very detailed baby registry.
That would be her. I just wish I knew what to do, how to help.
You're there for, Laura pointed out. All she has to do is ask.
That was true, Pam thought. She would be there no matter what. I suppose it's something that she trusts Jack with me. Not that she has much choice. If not me, then who?
Where did we go wrong with our children? Eugenia asked. I swear they all need a time out.
Everyone laughed. The waitress came over and asked if they wanted another round.
These are so delicious. Laura held up her glass. I'm going to speak for all of us and say yes. It's not like we're driving.
Every trip, they tried a new cocktail. Sometimes it went well and was their favorite drink for their time together. Other times, it was quickly abandoned. This weekend suggestion had been a French 75. Pam had never heard of it before, but found she liked the blend of gin, lemon, and champagne. It went down very easily, which could be both fun and dangerous. For a second, she wondered what Miguel would think of her friends. She had a feeling he would enjoy their company as much as she did. In turn, he would charm them. Her evening with him had been a lot of fun. After their margaritas, they'd gone to dinner at McGrath's pub on the boardwalk. Conversation had been easy, maybe too easy. Pam wasn't sure she was ready to like Miguel. What if she wanted to keep seeing him? What if she started to actually care about him? That would be far too confusing. She looked at each of her friends, then asked, "Do any of you date?" The table went silent.
"That's unexpected," Eugenia admitted. "I don't," Laura said flatly. "I'm not pining for my late husband. I miss him, of course, but I have to say, I love being single. I get to do what I want when I want. My kids and grandkids keep me busy. I have no idea where I would find the time."
She turned to Olympia.
"Next."
Olympia smiled. "I date. Some. There's no one special, if that's what you're asking, but I've been known to dine out with a man from time to time."
"Do you want to find someone?" Pam pressed. "Fall in love?"
"Gracious, no. If I felt sparks, I probably wouldn't say no, but casual relationships are plenty for me."
She smiled. "Besides, even though there are plenty of age-appropriate men around me in Florida, you know what? They still want to go out with someone younger." They all looked at Eugenia, who sighed.
"I've been seeing someone. He's very nice, and we've been together about a year now."
Pam felt her eyes widen.
"You never said anything."
"I know. I thought y'all would think I didn't want to be friends anymore, and I love our trips. I still want to take every one of them."
"We've never talked about this before," Olympia murmured. "I wonder why that is."
"We don't want to be judged."
Pam spoke without thinking, then realized it was true. "No matter our age, we worry about fitting in. We're all widows. If one of us has a man, does that change our friendship?"
Laura frowned. "I hope not. I'd be happy for any of you if you fell in love again. It's just not for me. Nurses and purses. That's all men want when they get to be our age."
"That's harsh," Olympia said gently.
"Maybe, but I've seen it happen." She turned to Pam. "What about you?"
Pam thought about Miguel.
"I accidentally went on a date."
They laughed.
"How was it an accident?" Eugenia asked.
Pam explained about meeting Miguel at Zoe's barbecue. She told them who he was and about Saldivar Tequila.
"He's so handsome and charming.
When he called and asked me to dinner, I thought he wanted to talk about his daughter.
And he didn't? Laura asked.
Not really. He came over a couple of days ago. We had dinner. It was nice.
And?
Olympia voiced the question gently. I'm mostly confused about dating. I never thought I would. I wasn't looking. John is still such a part of my life.
She held up her hand. Yes, I know I'm technically not married, but I don't feel single. Given the choice, I would rather be with John than with anyone else. Only no one is offering me that.
Their waitress arrived with their drinks. Conversation shifted to their plans for the next day and their upcoming cruise through Northern Europe. Later, after more drinks and dinner, they all walked back to their rooms. Eugenia and Pam were on a different floor than the others. They walked off the elevator together and started down the hall.
About Miguel, Eugenia said. I know it feels strange. At least it did for me. Like I was cheating on Roger or that I hadn't loved him enough. But that feeling goes away.
I'm not sure I want it to.
Her friend smiled at her.
I thought that too.
It will never be the same.
But that doesn't mean it can't be wonderful. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to have someone care about you. That doesn't mean you love John any less. Just be open to the possibilities.
I'm not sure I'm ready.
You might not be, and that's fine. Just know that the fear is normal. You can ignore it or deal with it, but feeling it doesn't have to mean anything.
Thank you for that. I am afraid, not to mention uncomfortable. Miguel is just so larger than life. I'm totally out of my element.
That sounds like fun.
Maybe. Pam was less sure. Still, she felt better than she had earlier. Nothing had to be decided tonight. If she wanted to keep seeing Miguel, that was her choice. If she walked away this second, she still had a perfectly wonderful life of her own. They reached Pam's room. Eugenia hugged her.
Sleep well. When you're ready to talk about sex, let me know.
Her friend grinned. It's kind of interesting to do it with someone else.
Pam's mouth dropped open. Sex? I would never do that.
Eugenia laughed. Just you wait. If Miguel is all you claim, then wouldn't it be fun to check him out naked?
You're drunk.
A little, but I'd still say this sober.
She waved and continued down the hall. Pam let herself into her room.
Sex with Miguel? Hardly. She was too old. No way she was going to get naked with someone else. Besides, she'd only ever been with John. That was what they did. She wasn't going to do that with another man. It would be wrong.
But even as she dismissed the idea, she remembered what it had been like to kiss Miguel.
Still, kissing wasn't sex, and there was absolutely no way she was ever going there. Ever.
Chapter 11 Sunday morning, Zoe and Stephen walked over to La Te Da to get coffee. Every second of their night together had been magical. Stephen was a gentle, passionate lover. They'd eaten late, and then he'd asked her to stay over. The logistics of her not having any of her stuff and having to feed Mason had sent them back to her place where they'd made love again, this time in her bed, and he'd spent the night with her. Chad had rarely stayed over. Once she'd found out he was married, she'd realized why he hadn't. The apartment he'd claimed as his own had actually belonged to a friend. Later, after the divorce, their pattern had already been set, so he'd always gone home. She'd spent much of the previous night listening to Stephen breathing and reveling in the concept of having a man in her bed for something other than sex. More than once he'd rolled over and wrapped his arm around her waist, pulling her close. In the morning they'd showered together, then had decided to go out for coffee. Now, as they walked into La Te Da, she admitted that even though things were moving quickly, she liked the direction. And him. They collected their order, then went outside to sit in the sun. It was cool but clear, and the day promised to be beautiful.
"Did you sleep?" he asked, passing her one of the Danishes they'd bought.
"Not much, but that's okay.
It had been worth it."
"You don't snore."
"Good to know."
Was it my imagination, or did Mason climb on my chest in the night and glare at me?
She giggled. He's trying to claim his territory. He's not used to sharing the pillow.
Stephen raised his eyebrows. The ex didn't sleep over?
Not very often.
Then he's an idiot on several levels.
She smiled.
What are your plans for today? He asked.
Nothing much. I'm going to go see my dad later. What about you? Do you...
She stopped talking when she saw a muscle twitch in Stephen's jaw.
What?
Nothing.
She replayed her last couple of sentences. You don't like my father? They'd only met at the barbecue, and she'd thought they'd gotten along fine.
It's not that.
His tone said it was something. She looked at him and waited.
I spoke to my mom Friday morning, before she left for Phoenix. She mentioned that your dad had been over the previous evening.
Surprising news, Zoe thought, but hardly reason to be upset. I don't understand.
I think they're dating.
Not possible. Pam would have said something to her, wouldn't she? They were friends, or at least friendly. Of course Miguel was her father, but she was dating Stephen, who was Pam's son, and they'd talked about that. All things she would take up with Pam when she was home. Why does that bother you? She asked.
Because of what you said about him. You said he was a player who dated really young women and never had a real relationship after your mom.
Zoe didn't remember being that specific, but maybe she had been. He's a really great guy, and the stuff with other women was a while ago.
She felt funny defending her father's dating history, but couldn't let Stephen think badly of him.
I'm sure he would be... She paused. Okay, I have no idea how he would be as a boyfriend, and to be honest, it's not something I want to think about.
I'm not enjoying this either. We're talking about my mom. The thing is, she hasn't dated since Dad died, and they were together from the time she was like 17. Miguel is totally out of her league. He's a man of the world. Stephen groaned. I can't believe I just said that. I tried to talk to my mom about it, and she wouldn't listen. I'm worried. If he were some accountant who'd been married 100 years, it would be different.
Yes, he would be too old for her then.
You know what I mean.
She did, and she was torn. While she appreciated that Stephen was the kind of man who looked out for his mother, she wasn't comfortable talking about her father this way. Dad's not a bad person. He's actually really nice and caring. Despite the divorce, he and my mom stayed friends. We spent holidays together.
I'm sorry. Zoe, I mean that. I don't want to upset you. I'm just worried about my mom. Can that be okay?
She nodded. She liked Stephen, and she didn't want to mess things up by being weird. Her father did have a reputation. She would have to think about what she wanted to do. Talk to him, or maybe talk to Pam. Or maybe just mind her own business. It's okay, she smiled. I promise.
Jen had never planned to make Easter dinner a big deal, but somehow, in the past couple years, that was exactly what it had become. The morning started quietly enough, with an Easter egg hunt for Jack in the backyard. As young as he was, he didn't exactly understand what he was looking for, but he seemed happy enough to pick up the toddler-sized plastic eggs they'd left on the grass for him. After that, the three of them had gone to church. Jen didn't get there as often as she would like, but she enjoyed Easter morning services the best. There was so much hope in the message, a promise for a happy future. The ever-present tightness in her chest seemed to ease just a little. But once they were home, all bets were off. The family dinner had somehow grown until it was of near Thanksgiving proportions. There were the three of them, plus Kirk's partner, Lucas, and whatever bimbo he was dating, Stephen, who was bringing Zoe, and her mom. Only Pam had called a couple of days ago to say she was bringing Miguel. Jen was still processing that snippet of information. She told herself the two of them must be just friends, but she couldn't help wondering if they were actually dating.
How can I help?
Kirk asked as he walked into the kitchen. Do you think my mom and Miguel are dating? He took a step back.
No way. I'm not having that conversation. If you want to know, you need to ask her. Speculation will only lead to trouble.
His adamant tone and the hint of fear in his eyes made her laugh. Why are you so rattled?
I'm not getting in the middle of family stuff. I know better.
Fair enough. What I need from you is to take care of Jack. I'm going to get cooking. She pointed to where their son sat at a small table. He'd already eaten most of his lunch and was now playing with some seeded cucumber slices. She would be busy all afternoon. She had the menu prepared, lots of easy appetizers, followed by a sweet corn chowder she'd made in the crock pot. The ham was ready to go into the roaster. Her mom was bringing over scalloped potatoes. There would be a couple of salads, and then Junior's Easter cheesecake she'd ordered from QVC. Dinner was at 5, and guests were to arrive about 3:30. She'd already figured out what serving dishes to use. They were mostly the ones her mom had always put out for her holiday meals, but she still had to set the table, get out the wine, finish up the cooking, and not have a panic attack today. Other than that, she was good.
Anything else? Kirk asked.
Taking care of Jack is the most important thing. I'll work faster if he's not underfoot.
Lucas and Caitlin will be by about 2. Maybe she can help if you need more hands in the kitchen.
Jen held in a scream. There was no point in complaining that Lucas and his girlfriend were arriving an hour and a half early. Kirk would simply look confused and explain Lucas wasn't any trouble. If only that were true. I doubt Kaylee is up for holiday cooking, she said instead.
Caitlin.
Whatever. She saw no reason to learn their names. From what she could tell, the women in Lucas's life were ever-changing. Next week, there would be a new one. Her husband moved close and wrapped his arms around her.
You're